Good morning and happy Palm Sunday to everybody. Man, if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Chris. I get to be one of the pastors here at this faith community. So happy that you're here with us if you're here in the house. Also want to welcome our online church family if you're joining us via live stream as well. Happy that you're here with us as well. And we are rounding the bend, right? We're on the home stretch now, heading towards Easter weekend. And so I'm just going to keep beating the same drum that I've been beating for the last month or so. This weekend's going to be a big weekend in the life of our church family. It is every year. This year's a little different. Last year we started a brand new tradition where we're doing a Good Friday service as well as Easter services. And so I want to encourage you, if there's any way possible, for you to be here for both of them, because the one really sets the stage for the other. And so I want to really encourage you to be here Friday night, 6:30 p.m. right here in this room for a contemplative service where, we're just going to kind of sit in the weight of the cross and the blood and kind of the darkness of that moment for Jesus. And that's really going to really, I think, set our hearts so that when we come in on Sunday morning, it really is an appropriate celebration for the resurrection and what he's done on our behalf. So a couple of things, just so that you're aware of it. The Good Friday service is not going to be live streamed, so that's an in-person event only. There are some things that we do here that don't translate well online, so that's one of those things that really I don't think translates well. So if you're watching online, we would invite you to come in person Friday night. And then the thing about Easter morning is, obviously we're going to have a bigger crowd, so I would encourage you to come a little bit early. We are going to have like a little family photo booth, Easter kind of booth for you. So if you want to get dressed up to the nines and go get your pictures there and throw it up on Instagram or whatever, you'll have that opportunity. But you need to come early so you can do that and then get a seat in here before we get cranked up. So please come early. And then the second thing, again, I'm just going to keep beating this dead horse, invite somebody to come with you, right? Like all the stats are very, very clear. People are open to come to church twice a year, Easter and Christmas. And so it's our job as followers of Jesus to be faithful in extending the invitation. It's not our job to force anybody to come with us. But let's be thinking about coworkers, colleagues, classmates, friends, people that we can bring here so that they can hear the good news of a resurrected king. And it's going to be a wonderful weekend. I'm so looking forward to it. I'm pumped up about it. Hope that you are, and hope that you're planning on bringing somebody with you. Now, let me just kind of put a idea out there. If I told you today that recently an ancient potion was just discovered in the Amazonian rainforest, and this ancient potion that we just discovered had the power to feed the hungry, heal the sick, build strong civilizations, and allowed human flourishing in amazing ways. But at the same time, this little potion also had the power to increase suffering, destroy families, cause people to betray those that they love most, make people sick, and kill love and joy in any society. Would you want control of that potion? And your answer to that question probably says a lot about who you are as a person. But what if I told you that you already command a similar substance right now? I just took that in the back of your mind, and it'll make sense in a minute. If you are new to New Life, we've been working our way systematically through Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which is probably the most famous sermon that's ever been preached in human history, where Jesus is describing what it's like to live in his upside-down kingdom. Like, what are we supposed to value in his kingdom? What really matters? How should we view relationships? How should we view forgiveness? How should we interact with our enemies? Like, all these really deep things. And he's been pressing on some really hard subjects that we've been having to kind of work through. Things like anger, lust, adultery, marriage, divorce, hypocrisy, even how to pray, which we looked at last week. And today, Jesus is yet again going to press in on another sensitive area of our lives, our stuff, our money, our possessions. Now, I can see the excitement all over your faces as we explore that, but you can relax. There's no financial ask coming at the end of the service. We're not going to do anything weird like pass the plates. I'm not after your money this morning, but I do want you to see, I want to show you why Jesus, by some estimates, spends about 25% of all of his public teachings on the topic of possessions and money. Isn't that wild? That Jesus would spend a fourth of all of his public teaching time talking about possessions and money. Now, I think we've got to ask the question, like, why is that? Why was he so intent on addressing this particular topic in our lives? Now, you may or may not be aware of this, but as Americans, we do live in the most affluent society that has ever existed in human history. Right? Like we have more stuff than any society has ever had before us. Stats tell us that we are accumulating stuff at a staggering and increasing rate as Americans. My wife and I, every spring we do a spring cleaning in our garage, right? Where we clean out all of our stuff. And so that's coming up for us pretty soon. The week after Easter, we're going to spend probably most of the day Saturday doing that. And every year we look at each other and we go, like, where did all this crap come from? Like, this is you. She's like, no, it's you. And we're like, okay, we're not going to fight about it. Let's just get rid of it. Let's go to Goodwill. Or let's blame it on our kids. They're upstairs, you know. But as a nation, and this is kind of shocking, we have more storage units than the rest of the world combined. And the storage unit industry is projected to be an $84 billion business in the next 24 months in America. We love our stuff. In fact, we buy places and spaces and rent more places and spaces because our crap is overflowing and we need more places to store our crap. We love our stuff. Listen to this, just to kind of highlight this truth. We as Americans consume twice as many material goods as we did just 50 years ago. So our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation, we've doubled the rate of spending and buying stuff just in one generation. This blew my mind. The average American home contains 300,000 items in it, from paper clips to big screen TVs. 300,000 items per American household. U.S. children make up about 3.7% of the children on the planet and yet own 47% of all toys on planet Earth. This one where it's going to get personal for some of y'all and for me. 25% of people who have a two-car garage do not have room to park either car in their garage because of all their junk. Don't raise your hand. 32% of people only have room for one car in their two-car garage. My hand is up on that one, I confess, right? We got room for one car at least, so I'm not as sinful as y'all that don't have any room. Not to be pharisaical, but still, it's pretty sad. Credit card debt is skyrocketing in our society. In fact, stats tell us for the first time in American history, total household debt in 2024 has now crossed the $17 trillion mark for personal credit card debt. With all of our stuff, we must be the happiest society on the planet, right? Coincidentally, the World Happiness Report was just released this last week, right? And so they have all these metrics and they measure every society and every culture and every nation and kind of put out the statistic of the happiest places, happiest people, happiest societies on planet Earth. Now, just taking a stab in the dark, some of you maybe saw that report, but how many of you think that the U.S. landed in the top five as the wealthiest nation to ever live? Top five? No? Anybody think? Oh, so one person? Two people? What about top 10? How many of you think we landed in the top 10? A couple of you. How many of you would guess top 15 at least? Gosh, that's not very, okay. For the first time since they've been taking this report, the U.S. fell outside of the top 20. We landed at number 23. Number 23. And the most unhappy generation in our nation are those under the age of 30. So more stuff, bigger houses, more shopping, more access to entertainment and stuff than we've ever had, and yet, statistically, the least happy and most medicated we've ever been as a society. What in the world is going on? Could it be that we're actually living for the wrong thing? Could it be that we've actually miscalculated the pathway to joy and satisfaction in the human experience? Now, it's really fascinating to me that the very next section that Jesus is going to address in his Sermon on the Mount is the subject of anxiety, right? We'll get to that after Easter. So Jesus goes directly from wealth to worry. And how many of you know those two things are absolutely connected? The more stuff you have, the more stuff you got to worry about, right? In the immortal words of the great theologian, philosopher, the notorious B.I.G., more money, more problems. right? Back when the rap game was strong in the 90s, not this gibberish that we have now, right? More money, more problems. He was a man ahead of his time, right? Actually, he was just repeating what Jesus said 2,000 years ago. And isn't that the motto of our age? The one who dies with the most toys wins. You maybe have even seen that bumper sticker on somebody's car. And how many of us have believed that cultural lie that if I have more in my hands, I'll be happier in my heart? Now listen, the point of today is not that wealth is wrong or that savings is evil. It's not what Jesus is after, right? The book of Proverbs is very clear that savings is wise, that wise financial planning is actually a good, godly, holy thing. We're supposed to do that as the people of God. But Jesus is concerned with your view of money because he knows that money ultimately is tethered to your heart. And it's tethered to your heart in a way that influences and affects your relationships, your future, and your spiritual formation. So there's a lot at stake here, and this is why Jesus spends so much time just hammering on our possessions and our wealth and our money. And what we're going to see today is that in Jesus' kingdom, money is a tool. Money's a tool, all right? So it's not inherently good. It's not inherently bad. It's simply a tool. It's kind of like a knife. If I were to ask you, is a knife good or bad, how would you answer? You probably would say, depends on who's holding the knife, right? If it's a skilled surgeon, it could be really good. If it's a madman serial killer, it could be really bad. It's just a tool. Money makes a great tool, but a terrible God. That's what we're going to see Jesus say today. So let me give you the big idea. This will be on the screens for you. If you're taking notes, write this down. This is what Jesus is saying. Invest your life in what really matters. That's what he's ultimately saying. Invest your life in what really matters. And what we're about to see Jesus do is he's going to give us three dichotomies or three comparisons. He's going to give us two treasures, two lenses, and two masters. So two treasures, two lenses, and two masters. And then at the end of it, he's going to go, you got to choose. You got to choose. What do you choose? Do you choose my kingdom or do you choose the kingdom of the world? Let's pause for a moment and ask for his help as we get ready to hop into his word. God, we come to you, and at least my tendency, I suspect the tendency for a lot of us, is to come to passages like this, come to teachings like this, and think this applies to someone else. This applies to the guy on Wall Street. This applies to the guy in Silicon Valley who's a billionaire. This applies to wealthy politicians or professional athletes, but this isn't for me. But God, it is for us. Particularly those of us who live in the wealthiest society that has ever existed on planet Earth. So God, help us not shuffle this off on someone else. Help us internalize this, personalize this teaching in our lives, God. We're so easily distracted and we're so good at justifying and quantifying and make it seem like our actions and everything around our possessions and our money are righteous and holy when oftentimes our motives are not in that place. And so, God, would you help these words land in soft places in our hearts, in our souls, in our minds, not to beat us up, but to free us from the tyranny of money and possessions so that we could live freely in your kingdom. And we ask for this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we're going to start in verse 19, as Gabrielle just read for us. And this is, again, this is Jesus teaching A, his disciples, but B, a large crowd who's also gathered to hear this sermon. And he says this, do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. So Jesus goes, hey, listen, in my kingdom, don't store up treasures on earth. Now this is the idea in the Greek of hoarding. So what Jesus is saying is, hey, don't heap up. Don't heap up, don't store up, don't hoard up stuff on earth. Now, why does it seem like Jesus is going after our wallets here? I think ultimately it seems like he's going after our wallets here because this is where it gets real for most of us. Right? Because the reality is we can say with our mouths that we value whatever we want to say that we value above everything else. But you know what never lies? Our bank statements. I read an author this week that said your credit card statement is your real doctrinal statement. Ouch. So Jesus is going to be talking a lot about our treasures ultimately. And listen, he doesn't need your money. He doesn't need my money. But ultimately because he cares about the health of our hearts. Now, we all love, as Americans especially, I think a good treasure story. Like half of our movies are like pirate movies and treasures and all kinds of great things. And I love treasure movies and pirate movies. I think about Pirates of the Caribbean, right? It's like one of my kids' favorites, and I love Jack Sparrow, and that's fun. And I remember growing up, kind of throwbacks to my childhood, Swiss Family Robinson. Anybody, any old folks remember that? Swiss Family Robinson. That was a great, I loved that movie, right? They're on this island with the big dogs running around. There's a treasure and pirates, and it was awesome. Or what about National Treasure? That's a great movie. Headlined by Nicolas Cage, maybe the worst cinematic actor in modern film history. Terrible actor, but great movie. We love treasure. Sorry, Nick. We love treasure. We love shiny stuff. We love new toys. We love all that glitters. And Jesus is like, okay, but be careful. Like, all right, but watch out, because there's something more sinister at play here that you need to be careful of and guard yourself from if you really want to walk in freedom and live in my kingdom. And I don't think Jesus is saying there's anything wrong with like the new titanium iPhone or a house with more square footage or that kitchen reno that you've got your eye on Pinterest or anything like that, or the cruise in the Bahamas that you're saving for. But you just got to know, none of those things can satisfy your soul. And ultimately, they do have the power to enslave your heart. John Stott, a pastor who's with the Lord now, said it beautifully, and he says this: Jesus is forbidding the selfish, keyword, selfish accumulation of goods. He is forbidding extravagant, wasteful, luxurious living. He is opposing the hard-heartedness that fails to feel compassion in the face of the tremendous sufferings of the world's poor. He is rejecting the foolish fantasy that a person's life consists in the abundance of his or her possessions and that one's worth should be judged by what one owns. He is decrying the materialism that tethers our hearts to the earth. Listen, y'all, money is a good tool. It's a terrible God. Good tool, terrible God. So invest your life and your possessions accordingly. And then Jesus gives this really fascinating reason for why we should not store up our treasures on earth. He's actually very logical about all of this. He goes, listen, guys, the reason you shouldn't do this is all this stuff is fading. Like all this stuff is fading. Like you can't even keep it here. Look, it breaks and it rusts and it can get stolen and stock markets crash and inflation goes up, so the value of the money that you have goes down. I honestly think one of the most meaningful, profound things parents can do for their kids when they're little is to take them to a junkyard and just sit there and have a conversation and point out all of those piles of rust and garbage that used to be somebody's prized possession and treasure. See that old car over there rusting in the ditch? Think about the man who maybe sacrificed his family to acquire that. And now it rusts in silence. Look at that stack over there of all those motorcycles and boats and couches and big screen TVs that now rest with the dust and the weeds for eternity. What did people sacrifice to get all of those things? Jesus is just simply saying, guys, listen, these things won't last. These things won't last. Don't give your heart away to things that won't last. Instead, invest your treasure in heaven. Invest your life in stuff that has eternal value. Now, let me ask you a question. What can you take with you to heaven? I mean, not a lot, but I think a couple of things. First of all, you take your walk with Jesus to heaven. And you can take other people to heaven. That's really it. So I think we say, hey, let's invest in spiritual formation, right? And growing in a deeper understanding of Jesus, and invest in other people. And I think Jesus is saying, hey, listen, enjoy stuff, but invest eternally. Now, why Jesus? This is so radical, and this flies in the face of everything that our culture tells us and everything that advertisement is geared to do in our lives, everything that we see on TV or hear on the radios or social media apps. This is so radical. This is so countercultural. Jesus is like, why are you asking this of us? And here's the key. Look at verse 21. For where your treasure is, there your what? There your heart will be also. And there's the key to the whole drill. Why does Jesus care about your stuff? Because he cares about your heart. And where your money flows, your heart goes. That's just a fact. I'll give you one personal example. I love sports in general. I love college football specifically. Never really cared about the NFL, right? Because I grew up in states that didn't have NFL teams. But 2 years ago, I had a friend in this, actually in this church. He's since moved on to another state, big loser. But he invited me to play in his fantasy football league, all right? Now, I don't know how many of you have ever played fantasy football. It's really kind of a dorky concept, right? Because you're like the fake coach of a fake team playing fake games based on what real players are actually doing on Sunday. But he's like, hey, look, so here's the deal. Got 10 of us. It's $20 to get in. First place wins, you know, a few bucks. Second place wins a few bucks. And look, I'm just telling you guys, I'm not proud of this, but I went from not knowing anything about pro football to knowing every player's name in the league, knowing where they went to school, how many kids they have and what their names are, when they had their last colonoscopy, what their injury tendencies are. Like, legitimately, I'm in the bathroom between services checking injury reports. Like, God save souls and heal hamstrings. Like, I need to win this week. Now, what happened? All it took was 20 bucks, and I'm in like a freak, right? 20 bucks is apparently the price of my heart. So this sermon was super easy for me to write this week. No tears, no snot bubbles of repentance or anything like that. Jesus is saying, listen, guys, what you strive after is going to possess you. What you strive after is ultimately going to possess you, and your heart is valuable, so don't give it to stuff that won't matter in the end. And I want you to see this. He's fighting for you, not your money. And we so often get this twisted, and we come to passages like this, and we get defensive and hands off, and this is my money, and the church is always asking. It's not about that at all. He's fighting for you, for your soul, for your freedom. He doesn't need your money. It's about your heart, and your heart matters. And so let me kind of just distill this down into three kingdom ethics for you. So money and possessions, the Jesus way. If you want to live in his kingdom and abide by his values, when it comes to the topic of your possessions and money, these are the things that we have to abide by. This needs to become our kingdom manifesto. Number one, he says, seek right treasure. Seek right treasure. Now, two things that feed into that. Number one is, he's saying, don't treasure possessions more than you treasure me. That's part of what it means to seek the right treasure. We're not seeking anything or treasuring anything above the Lord Jesus Christ. But he's also saying, do store up goods. He's not telling us not to store up goods. He's just telling us where to invest our goods. Do store up goods rooted in the eternal kingdom. So Jesus moves from two kind of treasures now to two types of lenses. Look at verse 22. Jesus says this, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And again, this is the context of our possessions and material wealth. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Now, this is a hard passage to understand. I had a friend ask me about this passage actually very recently. It's difficult. But I think what Jesus is saying here when he says that the eye is the lamp of the body, what he's really saying is just simply this. What you focus on is what you move toward. What you focus on is what you move toward. So the example that I thought of as I was studying is I had a friend a number of years ago. He was an avid mountain biker. I had never mountain biked before, and he invited me to come with him. And so we trek up this hill, and it was way harder than I thought it was going to be, and we're getting ready to go down the hill. It was way more terrifying than I imagined that it was going to be. But he said, here's the deal. When you see something that you don't want to hit, don't focus on it. Like, if you don't want to hit that root in the middle of the trail, don't look at the root. Look at the part of the trail that goes around the root. If you don't want to hit that tree right on the side of the trail, don't look at the tree or you're going to hit the tree. And so I went down that and I followed his advice and I survived. I had a seizure from fear when I got down at the bottom, but I survived the whole thing. I didn't die. It was really, really good advice. And this is true in the spiritual realm as well. What you focus on is what your heart is going to move towards. And Jesus is saying, if you focus on light, you'll be filled with what? Light. If you focus on darkness, you'll be filled with darkness. What you focus on, you move toward. And what you move toward will capture your heart. And I think in a real sense, what Jesus is saying here is, listen, what we behold is what we become. What we behold is ultimately what we become. And so when we have the wrong lenses on through which to view possessions and money and wealth and stuff, and we begin to think about, like, this is all for me. Like, I've earned this. I work hard for this. I went to school for this. This is me. This is mine. This is my kingdom. This is my glory. Like, that should be a red flag in our minds and our hearts that we're now treading in really, really dangerous waters that are antithetical to the kingdom of Jesus. And the inherent danger in greed, even though none of us would admit to having greedy hearts, the danger in greed, whether we see it in ourselves or not, is that it causes us to aim at the wrong things and miss what life is actually about. Right? It causes us to aim at the stump when we're supposed to be aiming to go around the stump. I remember back when I was coming up, one of the sports that I played in middle school and high school was football. And my freshman year, we were pretty good. Every year after that, we got worse and worse and worse, and we were terrible by the time I graduated. But my freshman year, we were good. We're like a top five team in the state. And we had a game against the number one team in the state, and they hadn't lost a game in like 18 years. It was a Reformation school, so like all the guys that got kicked out of public schools came here, and we were like 14, 15, 16 years old. We all had like a little peach fuzz on our lips, and we thought we were men. And then they got off the bus, and they all had full beards and like tattoo sleeves. Like there are three kids with them, and we're like, oh man, I think this is not going to go well. And but as we got on in the game, like we were actually hanging with them. We ended up losing by 2 points, but we were hanging with them. And late in the game, I remember I got the ball. I was coming around the end, and their all-state linebacker was waiting on me. And I'm like, all right, this is my moment. I'm gonna truck this guy. And the last thing I remember was like the sound of a shotgun going off, right? And I don't remember anything else from the rest of that night. But there's video evidence that after I got up from that tackle, I literally got up and I walked to the wrong huddle. I was with the wrong team. And they talked to me for a minute, and they're like, they start calling my trainers out, right? They're like, hey, come get this joker. He's trying to get our plays or something. So my trainers come out, and they help me walk off the field, and I walk 5 yards, and I fall. And they help me up, I walk another 5 yards, they fall. And eventually, the coaches just run out, and they drag me off the field, right? Now, this is before we knew anything about concussions, so like 5 minutes later, I was back in the game. I don't remember anything. So if I ever say anything rude to you, it's not me, it's the CTE, all right? So just don't. It's not me, right? Give me a little bit of grace. But here's the thing, guys. My brain was so scrambled, I was trying to play for the wrong team. And I'm convinced that for many of us, our thoughts have become so scrambled on this topic that we've begun to play for the wrong team. And we wonder why we keep winning the wrong prizes. Because we're playing on the wrong field for the wrong team. And Jesus is offering us this new lens through which we can see the world around us and our possessions and our bank account and our expenditures and all the good things that he gives us in life to enjoy. And we need these kingdom lenses to live rightly and thrive deeply in his kingdom. So, money and possessions. The Jesus way. Number one was seek right treasure. Number two is we have to learn how to see through the right lens so that we don't end up playing for the wrong team. And again, two kind of sub-points that go with that. Jesus is saying, don't view possessions through the lens of greed. And by the way, that's what our culture, tells us to do. Like, we marinate in that culture, right? And again, none of us would say I'm greedy, but a lot of times that's, again, our bank statements, our credit card statements would certainly confirm that. But do see possessions as a means of inviting light in and extending light out. See, the eyes inform the heart, right? You know that. The eyes inform the heart. What I look at, I care about. What holds your gaze captures your soul. So Jesus is saying, make sure you choose the right lens. One more kingdom dichotomy that Jesus wants us to see here in way as we tackle this subject of possessions and money. Verse 24, he says this, no one can serve two masters. For either he will, and he uses really strong language here, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and, again, strong language, despise the other. And then he really nails it home and he says this: you cannot serve God and money. Some translations even have mammon there instead of the word money. This was like the pagan god of possessions and money. You cannot serve the God of the Bible and the pagan god of mammon or money. See, here's the deal, guys. Money and possessions reveal the human heart like nothing else does. Money is a great tool. It's a terrible master. And what Jesus is saying here is nobody can serve two masters. Now, I know the temptation for you, because it's a temptation for me. The temptation is to think, yeah, nobody else can, but I can. Like, I know nobody through time and history has been able to serve Jesus and love him and treasure him above everything else and also love and treasure money, but I'm the exception. Because I'm more spiritual and I'm smarter and I got my crap together a little bit better than everybody else. And so I think I can ride that fence. I think I can love Jesus and serve him and also love and serve and live for possessions, wealth, money. And Jesus goes, wrong. Wrong. In fact, Jesus says, let me tell you why that's wrong. Because here's what's going to happen. You're going to end up loving the one and, listen, hating and despising the other. He's saying, listen, if you serve money, if that's what you eat, live, and breathe for, eventually you're going to come to despise God. If that's your reason for getting up every morning, is material possessions, wealth acquisition, eventually, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, or even next week, but where you're going to find is that your heart begins to despise God. But if you love me, if you love God, if you make me your highest treasure, if I am your master, then you'll learn to use possessions, wealth, money as a tool rather than serving it as a master. Charles Spurgeon is helpful for us. He says this on this topic: God and the world will never agree. And however much we may attempt it, we shall never be able to serve both. You can live for this world or you can live for the next, but to live equally for both is impossible. He's just saying exactly what Jesus said. It's not possible for you to love and serve Jesus and chase hard after him and simultaneously live for stuff. Paul says it this way in a letter to a young pastor named Timothy in a city called Ephesus. He writes this to him, 1 Timothy 6, "For we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out. If we have food and clothing, we will be content with these. But those who want to be rich fall into a temptation, a trap, and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, and by craving it, some have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs." Money is a good tool. It's a terrible god. And if you don't learn to master it, it will master you. And Jesus' argument is this: invest your treasure in the eternal, not the temporary, not the finite. And again, Jesus is not against you having stuff. He's against your stuff having you. See, in many ways, money is a mirror and a microscope, right? It shows us who we really are. And it reveals to others what's really under the surface of our lives and the masks that we wear. Now, not to state the obvious, but you can't, and you know this, but a lot of us don't live in this reality. You can't take anything with you materially, right? Are we on the same page there? Like, you leave exactly how you came in, with nothing materially. It's kind of like the old saying, you'll never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. If you do, that was a psychotic man or woman, right? We take nothing with us. Now, here's the danger of money. Money can first distort reality for us, where we have the wrong lens on and we begin to see things and value things that are not in the kingdom of Jesus. So first it can distort, then it begins to deceive us. And we begin to tell ourselves these lies, like, yes, I can serve Jesus and I can serve mammon at the same time. So it distorts, then it deceives, finally it derails our walk with Jesus completely. just like Paul was saying to Timothy. It can completely derail our spiritual journey. This is why this matters. So, money and possessions, the Jesus way, seek right treasure, see through the right lens. And number three, that really ties all of this together, probably the most important one, Jesus says, make sure that you're serving the right master. Make sure that you're serving the right master. So, right treasure, right lens, right master. Three dichotomies, all pointing to the same truth. Don't waste your life. Look at 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Again, this is Apostle Paul writing to a young pastor. He says, instruct those who are rich. Now, again, let me pause here and say, my tendency, and probably yours, is to think of other people when you read passages like this. I just want to encourage you not to buy into that lie. He's talking to you. Particularly if you're an American, living in America in 2024, you're in this category of rich. He's not talking to other people. He's talking to you and me. Instruct those who are rich in the present age not to be arrogant or to set their hope on the uncertainty of wealth, but on God who richly provides us with all things to enjoy. So does God want us to enjoy his good gifts? Yeah, he does want us to enjoy his good gifts. But verse 18, instruct them to do what is good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and willing to share, storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of what is truly life. Living is about more than having. Living is about more than experiences. Money is a good tool, so use it. Enjoy a good meal. Take a fun vacation. Provide for your family's needs, right? Build a family. Rent a nice apartment. Buy a nice house. But do not hoard all of these things for yourself, because Jesus says this is toxic for your soul. So, for you this morning, what do you really value? Follow the trail, it will lead to a throne. What's on that throne for you? I'm just telling you, if it's anything other than Jesus, just know this, and this is not a sermon on giving, but this is important. Giving is the antidote to greed. I don't know if you knew that or not. Giving is the antidote to greed, because when we give, what we're doing is we're making a proclamation to the world, you don't own me. I don't live for you. I don't serve you. I don't bow to mammon. Right? You don't control me. I belong to another king and a better kingdom. And do you know who modeled generosity really well, like extravagantly well? Jesus, who left the riches of heaven to come into our poverty, to purchase our lives and our freedom with his very blood. That's one of the things I love about Jesus, is he never asks us to do what he has not first done himself. He never asks us to walk a pathway that he hasn't first walked himself. And he's modeled selfless generosity to a level that's really incomprehensible for us. And then he invites us into that ancient pathway of generosity. Not to enslave us, but to free us, to live life the way that he's designed us to live life. So as we close, maybe Jesus is simply asking you the question that I feel like he was asking me this week. Will you trust me? Like really? Will you trust me? Like, don't you know I have a bigger purpose for you than a nicer wardrobe or a bigger house or a more fancy vacation? Like, yes, enjoy my good gifts, but pursue and invest in my kingdom, because that's where the good life is found. Like, that's where it lives. Invest your life in what really matters, church family. Jesus is offering us this new way, this better way, and a new kingdom through these new lenses, freedom from the tyranny of money. And the message is crystal clear. Invest your life in what really matters. Invest your life in what really matters. And so here's what I want to do as the band goes ahead and heads up. Here's what I want to do for the next few minutes that we have left. I want to simply make room for you to connect with your Creator. And what I want to invite you to do is invite the Spirit right now to just surface anything that's harmful in your heart, in your soul, in your thought patterns as it relates to what Jesus just taught. want you to invite Holy Spirit to heal anything that's unhealthy or sick in these areas of your heart, as I'm going to pray that he'll do in my heart. And what we're going to do is I'm just going to put a few contemplation questions on the screen for you and some prayer prompts. And just in the silence of your own seat and your own heart, I want you to think through these things and pray through these things just for maybe 3 minutes, and then we'll come back together, pray again, and we'll end our time in worship, all right? So you take just a few minutes, you pray through those prompts. God, I want to trust you in every area of my life. And yet, I confess that sometimes my life tells a different story. So, God, would you increase my faith? Would you help me trust you more? Would you increase our faith, Father, collectively as a community of faith right here in this church family? Would you drive our trust deeper in you, God? Would you help us seek the right treasure, seeing through the right lens and serving the right master, both for our good, the good of our neighbors, and ultimately the glory and fame of Jesus Christ? It's his name that we ask and we pray. Amen. Church, would you stand as we sing?